What's up, everybody? Daryl Frater, the club CEO here, and we have another amazing episode of the My DJ Story podcast brought to you by the Club app, the number one online community for DJs. We can stream for free and not get cut off. Today, we have my brother, D Mecca, here to tell his story. Brother, can you please introduce yourself to the people, who you are and where you're from?
Hey, everyone. This is yours truly, D Mecca, the soul conductor, representing New York City straight out of Harlem. And I'm here with you, brother.
Awesome, man. We're super excited to have you on the podcast. We really are super interested in hearing your story in the DJ industry. So let's take it right to the beginning. You know, why did you become a DJ? What sparked your interest? And, you know, tell us how you got started.
I got started. Well, what sparked my interest was I have stepbrothers that I would stay with when I was younger. In the summertime, they lived in Soundview Projects. And this one particular summer, they had a park jam, as we would call it back in the days in Soundview. And I actually snuck out the house because my stepbrother and them used to live on the second floor, but their room was right above the awning to the building. So I was able to climb down and go across the street to the park. And because I heard the music and used to always hear about the tapes back in the day. And so I climbed down, I go across the street, and Lord and behold, it's Grandmaster Flash DJing. And I'm like, wow. So as I'm watching him, I'm watching the crowd. And then just for him to have almost like a godlike control of the crowd, man. And just to watch his movements, hand movements and everything, how he would catch the record. It was like it was flawless. So it was like second nature to him. And that's where I got the bug from. That's what I wanted to do. And I mean, I paid the ultimate price because when I snuck back in the house, my stepmother clocked me with a iron skillet. And I don't remember nothing after that. After I snuck back in the window, she thought I was a burglar, and woke up the next morning, had the speed knot. And you would think maybe because of the unconscious act that I would probably forgot why I even went outside. But that didn't stop. I wanted to still be a DJ. So I had a cousin that lived that's from Harlem, 139th Street in Lenox. And he grew up with the legends of like, Hollywood, Donald D, Disco Dave and stuff like that. So he had equipment and I would go to his house and he would let me practice. I told him, he said, "You sure you want to do this? You sure you want to do this?" I was like, "Yes, that's what I want to do. I want to learn how to be a DJ." And I would spend most of my time at his house, man, just practicing and just trying to emulate what I saw. And one time practicing so much, he had two girls over. Of course, one was for me, and he went in the room with his, and I was still in the living room with mine's. And I played with the turntables. He comes back outside. He's like, "Yo, what are you doing?" "What do you mean?" "I'm DJing." "Hello, she's sitting there." "Oh, okay." Never paid that girl no mind. She was mad. To this day, I know who she is. Every time once in a while we see each other, we laugh about it. And she's like, so she says, she'll say like, "Mm-hmm." So obviously, practice made perfect. And I said, "I guess so." So we joke about it today. And, so I've always come up this saying to people, you always start out as a bedroom DJ. You just don't wake up the next day, boom, you in the club, you doing tours or you doing, no, you don't, that doesn't happen. It doesn't work like that. So I'm a bedroom DJ. I do a little house parties around with my peoples and everything. So, all through high, going through high school. So I get to college. I go to college on a basketball scholarship. But yet, you know, when they find out you're the DJ, it's like, oh, that's like I'm like the first Obama. I'm like the president, and he on the basketball team and he a DJ. So, you know, I'm doing the school parties, this, that, and the third. I meet up with one of my boys, my man Rock, who's actually like one of my brothers to this day. And, you know, we do all the school parties, you know, and then people are hiring us to do their private parties, weddings and stuff like that. So, you know, it's going well. So when we finally get out of school, he goes to, he starts hanging out at nightclubs downtown, like the original tunnel, the New York City tunnel before Flex. And I have to say, no disrespect to Flex, but I have to say before Flex, because a lot of people don't know there was a tunnel before Flex when, you know, so, you know, shout out to Funkmaster Flex. So I go there as a security guard. He hires me as a bouncer. Well, not my brother, but the people there. And, you know, a couple of months go by, you know, we hang out before the club opens. I got a little car, I got a little system in it and playing spots and everything. You know, I'm paying my little homemade mixtapes. And so one day, the house DJ, who's actually Johnny Dinell, shout outs to him. He comes in early and he's like, yo. So I think he goes, I'm sitting on the step. I think he walks past me to go put his records up and everything, and I'm paying it no mind. So probably about 20 minutes later, I hear him goes, yo, who did that tape? And everybody points to me like just to make me look bad. Like if I was a bad guy or I stole something, they go him. He goes, yo, that is nice. I like that. And he says, yo, how would you like to open up for me? Like 2 hours tomorrow night. And I think this was like a Friday. This was a Thursday. This happened, but he was talking about Friday night. And I was like, what are you talking about? That's just like a homemade tape. I don't, you know, I just like DJing, but I've never thought about doing the nightclub. And he's like, yo, he said, yo, bring like 2 crates of records, man. I like what you did. I'll pay you for the 2 hours. You can go back to doing the security, whatever afterwards. So being a New Yorker, you're more of seeing is believing. You know, you could tell me a bunch of stuff until I see it, I'm not believing it. So I was like, yeah, okay, all right, cool. So, you know, go home, I get my little 2 crates of records to go together and everything. And I bring them, but I don't bring, you know, I had a car, so I leave them in the trunk. I don't bring them until I'm definitely sure that I'm playing. So I get there early. I'm speaking to the dude that runs security and I'm everything. I said, yo, you remember what Johnny said yesterday? He said, yeah. He said, open up. And I was like, are you sure it's okay? He's like, yeah. So I get upstairs. Now, I've seen the system before, but never knew really how to turn on everything. And I get up there and I'm sitting there looking at this stuff for like 20 minutes. And everybody's like, yo, what's wrong? Why you ain't playing? I said, where's the on button? I can't find the on switch. And the dude said, it's already on. Just put a record on and everything. So I'm not used to, you know, a system. Because you at home, you turn on each piece one by one, turn on turntable, turn mixer. So I said, all right, cool. So I play my first record. Now, nobody's in the club yet. I'm just, you know, going through the motions, getting my feel. I'm feeling good. Time comes to let the people in the thing. And I'm looking, okay, the first 15 people, you're like, all right, cool, I'm good with that. You go to turn around and get a record and come back, the whole dance floor is like, boom, and you're like, oh, snap. I'm sitting there like, yo, oh. Everything that I thought I was going to play gone. I couldn't. I'm sitting there. I'm like, you want to talk about a brain fart? I was like, yo, this is real. This is serious. Oh, man. And as I'm saying this, I'm listening to the record and I'm listening to it fade out. And I was like, oh, so I, you know, jump up, I throw another record on. And people are, you know, they're not, yeah, you know, they're not doing anything, but they, you know, they, And probably about 20 minutes, I was fumbles. I was missing mixes, missing cuts, scrap, you know, just effing it up. And I was like, oh man, I'm bombing, like this at the third. So my boy that I went to college with, who actually works there too, was like, yo man, take a deep breath, this at the third. Remember that mix we did, blah, 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 this at the third. And I was like, yeah, he said, yo, try that. I said, yeah, okay, all right. So I do it and it gets over because everybody's like, yeah, you know, they dancing around and everything. So I'm like, oh, okay. So it's like that. And I think like right after that is when I got into the groove of the crowd, the hypeness of it, when the people were cheering and then, you know, they were, you know, they were dancing. And then you go to the next record, they dancing even more and more people. Ah, I finally calmed down. So not knowing through all this, Johnny is actually there from the beginning. I'm sitting there like, so when it's time for him to come on, he comes in probably like 10 minutes, comes into the booth like 10 minutes before he comes on. He goes, yo, man. He said, yo, you worked that out. You worked right through that, man. You did your thing. I was like, word, man. I said, you know, I thought I was a bomb. He was like, nah, man. He said, yo, you actually did your thing. And as he's talking to me, he's paying me. And I'm sitting there like, word, man. Oh, man. Wow. Thanks for the opportunity. So I'm just thinking it's a one-shot deal. He goes, all right, so I'm going to see you next Friday, right? Yeah. Huh? He's like, yeah, I'm going to see you next Friday. He said, yo, I want you from now on every Friday to open up for me. And I was like, yo, you serious? He said, yeah. He said, yo, man, you did your thing, X, Y, and Z. So I'm like, wow. That is, yo, now I'm, you know, head got a little swole. And I'm like, word. Man, dag, man, thanks a lot. This is the third. So as the summer approaches, I'm probably like, this happened like in March. So like around June, it started getting nice, you know, and everything, more people are coming. So now in the meantime, in between time, before all that, I would meet celebrities like my, like the hip hop heroes, Love Bug Starsky, Kent used to come to the club, Kid Capri, DJ Clark Kent, Dana Dane, all of them. And that was normal. It became normal because when they come, they'd be like, yo, what's up? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and you know, back then it was more if you were somewhat of a celebrity, you didn't have to stand online. You didn't have to wait to get picked. You just walk up to the rope, you open the rope, boom, you walk in. So like I said, now I'm going into like June and stuff. And I'm still doing the Fridays. So this one Friday, I'm doing my thing. This at the third, Johnny comes in. He's like, yo, man. He said, all right, well, let's get ready to switch out. As I'm playing, get ready to play my last song, I turn around. DJ Clark Kent is standing right behind me with his arms folded. He's like, yo, you do security, you throw people out, you tell jokes, and you DJ. And I look at him like, yeah, no. Oh, that's not, no, what you doing is DJ. And this here, I'm just warming up for him, you know? And he's like, yo, he said, yo, man, I ain't never seen somebody mix oil and water. And when he said it, I'm looking kind of puzzled. I'm sitting there like, okay, I wasn't the sharpest dude in science class, but I do remember oil and water don't mix. And I said, you know, oil and water don't mix. He says, my point exactly. You made it work. And I was like, word. So he was like, yo, check this out, man. I don't know if you remember Freaknik. Was it Freaknik? It was some, It was always in Philly, but it was like what Atlanta has. I think it was called Freaknik or something else. He was always doing that. And he was like, yo, next week, I'm going down to do the Freaknik in Philly. Roll with me. He said, I got you. Cause I actually had a van. I had a custom van with the captain chairs, a little bed and everything in the back. It was a little hooked up. And he was like, yo, I got gas and tolls and all that. You just got to worry about getting your own food. And I was like, all right, cool. So like, once again, seeing is believing. So he gives me his address, and me and my cousin, who is definitely part of my upbringing and being a DJ, my cousin is T-Rock, DJ T-Rock. And we get the address, we go out to Brooklyn. Now we sit in front of his house. He had him and his family had a brownstone at the time. And we sitting outside. Yeah, all right, man. Listen, I'm gonna give this dude another 15 minutes and we gonna break out, cause you know how it is. We seeing is believing. That's your New York mentality when it comes to people telling you things and not coming up. So it was like, all right. So as soon as I finished saying that statement, who comes out with a bag? He goes, yo, help me. So he brings about four crates of records. So we go and help him grab the records, put them in the van, and we head down to Philly. And when we get to, I forgot the name of the park, but we get to the park, they got all, you know, got the people out with the, and all you do is just see systems left, systems right, people this, that, and third. Everybody's like, yo, what's up, Clark? Blah, blah, blah. Soon, you know, we're halfway in the park and all of a sudden, ayo, Clark! Turn around, DJ Jazzy Jeff. And I was like, okay, let me show my pants is, I think I soaked myself. You know, because that at that time, he and still is, was the hottest DJ that was out like that outside of Clark Kent, you know. But that summer was very big for me and very a big influence, because that was when I was going to the DMC concert, the contest, going to other parties, meeting, you know, DJs. It was a great summer. And I think we've hung out for like summers after summers after that. But that first summer with him is when basically I got introduced to the industry. He wound up getting me a residency at Mars. I don't know if you remember Mars, which was probably like 10 blocks away from the tunnel. And he knew the owner. So he got me a residency playing on the second floor in Mars. And I was playing with DJ Moby. I don't know if you remember, DJ Moby is basically before all this EDM started, he was like, he should be mentioned as a pioneer for EDM, because he was the one that, like, he had an Elise's, what was it? It was like a drum machine, but that's how he would play. I mean, back in the day, he was looking like Sean Penn from Fast Time at Ridgemont High, had the blonde white hair, looking like a beach bum. That's what Moby used to look like. But I opened up on the second floor with him. African Bambaataa was on the first floor, and there was another I can't remember the DJ. So that's how I got into the business of nightclubs outside. I was still doing the tunnel, but I had my own personal night. You know, I didn't have to open up for nobody. It was there at Mars. Later on that summer, he got me my so-called internship at Kiss FM. I was working the street team with Big Uncle Red, Uncle Red Alert, and you know, we worked with Wendy Williams and stuff like that in the street team. I also I worked for Elektra Records. No, Select Records. I'm sorry, that's the label with Salt and Pepper, Sybil. I'm not sure if Kid and Play was on it. Shout out to my man Wyatt Cheek, who hired me. And it basically took off from there. Me being, even though I'm 6'5", 300, I've always been big. 3+, I'm going to say that. I'm 3+ always since then. And always been humble of my my givens. And we used to hang out so tough that when he had created the Superman Inc., I was part of that. And I had made a mixtape one day, and I put on there The Adventures of Jimmy Olsen. And I gave it to him because I really didn't have a name. Everybody would just call me DJD. And I was like, okay, we can't, you know. And I gave it to him, and he looked at it and he threw it back at me. Like, what the fuck is, I don't mean to curse. I don't know, can I curse or cuss a little bit? Or okay, but I'm not a cusser like that. He said, what the hell is this you giving me, man? I was like, it was a tape, man. You told me to make a tape. He said, yo, what is that on the label? I said, it's The Adventures of Jimmy Olsen. Yo, man, you are not my sidekick. You're like a brother to me. Yo, you're not using that. And that was then more of, I started using DL, which is part of my initials. DJ DL. No, I'm sorry. Because on the flyer that at that time was Brother D. So when he said that, I started using Brother D. And then further on in life, I changed it to DL. And then like in 2005, I changed it because of, I had a somewhat of, my dad, lost my dad. And he was very instrumental in my life about everything. So that's why I'm, changed it to D-Mecca, but I'm going to get to that soon. So when he threw the tape back at me, I was like, oh man, I effed up. And he was like, nah, man. He said, yo, you're like a brother to me, man. Never doubt yourself. He said, first of all, never doubt yourself and never put yourself down when you're trying to make your way up. And I took heed to that. So it was more of, he taught me a lot of things about how to survive in the industry and stuff and things like that, of that nature. So I started using Brother D. Started doing my own thing. Started doing parties. My biggest party was at Kilimanjaro's at the time, where I brought, it was Kiss and BLS. It was a fundraiser. And I had Clark Kent was DJing. I had Red Alert DJing, but it was my function. And I started blowing up, you know, around that time, meeting different people. My sister, she at this time, she was dating Big Free from In Touch, the group. She's Too Hype. She's Too Hype. That song, yo, Free, you understand? That's she started dating him and married him. So that's my brother-in-law. And, you know, then I started hanging out with him. So it's a different part of the industry I'm starting to see. And people are like, I know you from somewhere. I was like, I hang out with Clark Kent. They was like, oh, okay, yeah, all right, cool. So, you know, so that's how I started getting my name around. And then, like I said, then I wind up meeting my wife at the time, ex-wife now, but she was part of the industry. So it was like with her, we wound up moving to DC, and that's when I got into the thing of go-go. Oh man, you want to talk about a whole new, it was go-go. When I got down there, her best friend's husband, me and him became real close, and he introduced me to go-go. You know, he would play the tapes in the car, but me being such the a-hole New Yorker, damn, I don't want to hear that crap, man. It sounds like trash, blah, 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 you know, because all you hear is the boom, ding, ding, boom, and it's in the car system. So it's like, for me, it was like, nah, I don't want to hear that crap. So I get with a DJ company, because now before I started, got my real job, I needed to make some type of money. So Shout out to Nards Entertainment in Virginia, where at that time there was a DJ company where if you had equipment, you could make more money. But it, you know, if you got the equipment for them, you had to make what, you know, they was giving out. So, all right, cool, whatever. So I'm doing my thing. I'm making my bones. So it became the point to where I became like the number one dude when it came to school functions, proms, their holiday parties, blah, blah, blah. And so the owner one day calls me up on my day off. He said, "Yo, D man, I need you." I said, "What?" He says, "I need you for a prom." I said, "Yeah, but it's my day off." He said, "Y'all give you $500. What? Okay. I said, "But I got to use your equipment, right? So you go take out the five." He says, "No, bro." He says, "Use the equipment and you keep the $500. Word. I bet. I said, "What? Okay, what's in detail?" He says, "It's for Gonzaga High School." At that time, Gonzaga is like one of the richest white kid high school in D.C. And I said, "All right, cool. Where's it at?" It was at this big, like, it, not the W, but it was like the W at that time in D.C. I said, "All right, bet, cool. Give me the time and date, this and third." So he gives me all that. And right before I get ready to hang up, he says, "Oh, yo, there's one thing." "What?" "You got to play with a go-go band." Before we started making that firm, I was saying that. I was like, "Yo, now, like I said, my boy Rodney, my man Rodney, who was introducing me to it, he would always tell me about certain go-go bands. You know, Rare Essence, EU, Junkyard, Backyard." So he was always telling me, like, "Backyard is that band, but wherever they go, they leave bodies." I was like, "What the hell you mean leave bodies?" He said, "Every time they play somewhere, somebody gets shot." So I was like, "Oh, man." So and before this, I've always said, "Well, I ain't got to worry about it because I ain't going to never play with a band." So when he tells me it's a go-go band, I go, "All right, man. What go-go band is it?" And I'm thinking, "Not Junkyard, not Junkyard." He goes, "Yeah, it's Junkyard." I was like, "Really, man?" He said, "Yeah." So I was like, "All right, man." So I tell my boy, he's like, "Bet." He's like, "Yo, get the joint now." He, like I said, he's a go-go head. So if he gets the opportunity to go where a go-go band, he's in there. Boom. So we get there, we set up and everything. So now I meet Big G, who is the leader of Junkyard. And he goes, "Yo, what's up, man? Blah, blah, blah. Give me a pound this there." He said, "Yo, this is how it's going to go down. You're going to start off and then we're going to play and then you're going to do the intermission. And after the intermission, we're going to play out and then you can basically go home when we start the second set." So I said, "All right, bet. Cool, whatever." So I get out there, I do my thing, you know, the little kids having the ball, this, that, and third. As I'm going in the back, Big G says, "Yo," he said, "You ain't from here, are you?" I was like, "Nah." So now I'm wheels are clicking because I know at that back then we're talking like 90s, the early 90s or so. New York and DC were not, you know, they weren't on great terms. So, you know, dudes from New York come down here and try to direct, you know, I'm thinking, "Oh man, I'm gonna have to start knocking dudes out, this, that, and third." He's like, "Yo, you did your thing, bro." He said, "Yeah, I know you ain't from here." He said, "Where you from?" I said, "New York." He says, "Yo, dude, yo, you rocked. You did your thing." So I was like, "Oh, all right. Thanks, man. Thanks. Peace. Thanks." So they get out there. So now like I said, my New Yorkism is more like, "I got to hear this garbage." I was like, "Shh." So, man, they started to rocking and then they hit that pocket. And when you hear go-go live, the instruments is more like it's so, and you have to really be a real music head to understand it. It's like when you hear live instruments compared to what you hear on record, it's so like, again, and they was hitting this pocket. And then when they hit that boom, and I was sitting there like, ooh, oh my God, I was shivers. I was like, yo. So my boy, he left me, he out in the crowd with the kids doing the, I was like, you can't take people nowhere, but every time you take, I can't even take this dude nowhere. Now I'm in the back with one of they, with a couple of they dudes, but I'm rocking though. I'm sitting there, ooh, I got the, you know, and I go, yo, man, so like, what is this? Like, what kind of music is this? Cause I'm not thinking the go-go I used to hear on cassette. He says it's go-go. I was like, nah, man. I said, yo, man, this ain't what I've been hearing. He said, you've been listening to it on tape, have you? Like he knew where I was going to go with it. I was like, yeah. Yeah, I used to live my man out there. He plays it on the thing. And then he said, yo, man, he said, go-go is a vibe, man. It's a vibe. And when I said when they went in, I was like, yo, okay. All right, cool. They came back. I gave him a pound. I was like, yo, gee, that's, yo, I said, yo, you made me a believer. Blah, blah, blah. This, that, and the third. So I go back and I do my last set, tear it up. And he's like, yo, my man. He said, yo, I want to work with you again. This, that, and the third. So I was like, all right, cool. You know, I'm just here, you know. And it, but like I said, at that time, my wife was in the industry. I'm not going to give out her name because she's still in it. You know, those that know me know who she is. And when I told him who my wife was, he was like, word? Oh, yo. Boom. Next thing I know, couple of weeks later, who at the door? Yo, what up, D? And I'm sitting there like, oh, Lord, look at this here. Ain't this something else? So, boom. Me and him talking. And we sitting out on the porch where we live at. And my brother-in-law, Big Free, is coming. So, he's like, oh, they don't know each other, but they know of each other. So, he says, all right, cool, bet this and the third. A little backtrack. I met a gentleman who lived a couple of doors down from me. Shout out to Dyke, rest in peace to him and his family. Was one of the brothers, one of the originators of Trouble Funk. Lived two doors down from me. So like my roots in music have been like very instrumental in my journey in DJing.
Wow.
You know, which I didn't mention, growing up, my mom grew up with the Isley Brothers on the 147th in Amsterdam.
Wow. So
it's like,
it's crazy, man. Your whole story has been great people just in close proximity to you, and for you to be able to build relationships and absorb the wisdom from these great people in the industry, just in so close proximity to you. And it just all worked out for you, opportunity after opportunity.
Yeah. Like,
that's amazing, brother.
Yeah. And you know, so it's crazy. So I'm, like I said, back to my man Dyke, he comes, as he's coming in, G is leaving. They know each other because it's a go-go thing down there. So they're like, oh, what are you? He said, oh, you my man. All right, cool. So me and my brother-in-law are sitting there. Dyke goes in his house and he comes back out as he's walking towards where we are. He looks, he goes, Free? Free goes, Dyke? Like a family reunion again. I was like, oh Lord, I can't take you nowhere. They know, but they known each other from way back because of that. So, you know, and you know, he, you know, I'm getting like press testings of go-go music, this, that, and the third. And, as it builds, I used to, when I first moved down there, I used to always come back to New York to get my hair cut. Cause I, you know, as a New Yorker, you know, this is, you know, you don't let nobody touch the crown unless you, you know, if you, don't matter if you lived in Europe, you come and listen, I'm going back home for a week. I got, you know, so every weekend I would drive back up to New York to get my hair cut. And people be like, yo, bro, did you move or you just playing with us? Nah, man, I moved. I'm, you know, so-and-so. So this one weekend, I lived across the street from a little shopping mall and it had a barbershop in it. And I said, you know what? I don't even feel like driving today. I go to the mall and I look at the barbershop. So I'm very observant. New Yorkers is patient. When it, like I say, when it comes to your hair, you're going to be like, yo, I'm not going to just have anybody just throw a bowl on my joint and spin me around in a chair and go, you know, not doing that. So the barber peeps me in the back, peeping them. And he's like, yo, he says, all right, I see you. I see how you are. You ain't from here, right? I said, nah. He said, I see you people in the South. So you trying to figure out who's the better barber from good to worse. I said, yeah, yeah. He said, well, I got you. So, you know, he cuts my hair and he actually does a good job. So I'm like, all right, cool. So I don't come back the following week. I come back probably 2 weeks later. You know, he does it again, hooks me up. So, you know, we start to talk and this, that, and the third. And he says, so what you do? I told him I DJ, blah, 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 this, that, and the third. He said, oh, you're from New York. So, you know, I'm telling, you know, stories and stuff that I used to do. And so one day, my wife is doing a album release party, a listening party for one of the artists. She's like, yo, invite the people down to from the barbershop. I got them, because she has to, I guess at that time she was, whatever club she was renting, she had to have a drink bar guarantee. So she was trying to get people in there, and plus for the artist. So I invite them. I invite like 7 or 8 people come. My man Jeff, who was my barber, it was Jeff, Chris, and Lisa. They come, they bring their mates and everything. They have a good old time. My man Jeff, wounded, out the door. You know, when he leave, he wounded. So it's like, yo. I come back the next day. Jeff is not at the barbershop. Ain't nobody seen Jeff. Week and a half go by, ain't nobody seen Jeff. Jeff is licking wounds from getting that blasted from the party. So I was like, all right, cool. So when he finally meet up, he's like, yo, that party, blah, blah, blah. This and the third. He says, yo, you know Jay's Cafe across the parking lot? I was like, yeah. I'm about to run that joint. You want a spot? Word. Bet. So boom, you know, I'm in there. This and the third. So he's like, yo, I'm starting a go-go band. I'm like, oh boy, here we go with this go-go shit again. You know, it's like, all right, you know, I'm already cool with the thing. So he starts the band up. When I say he's having tryouts, people coming and playing, you know, playing each instrument, the keyboards, congas, drums, guitars and all that singing. So he's picking his band. So when he finally gets the band together, the band is called, their name is called Virtuous Band. All right, cool. You know, and like I said, they rocked and everything. So one day I'm playing in between the band breaks, but I'm playing in the headphones as they're getting ready to warm up to do their second set. So I'm thinking the sound man got my levels down so they can't hear my music. It was Impeach the President I was playing, because I'm not a turntablist. I get my little wiki on, you know, boom, 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 boom. I can stay in my lane. I can keep the beat going, right? So I'm doing boom, 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 and everything. So I'm looking, I got the headphones on, I'm looking at people. So I'm like, oh, damn. I said, the band must be rocking. So I stopped the music, and the band is sitting there looking at me like, yo, what are you doing? I thought y'all was rocking. Yeah, we rocking with what you playing. Rocking with what I'm playing. I look at the sound man. Sound man's like, oh, I didn't turn your channel down. So yeah, you was playing live all that time. I said, when I was doing all this, and he was like, yeah. The band was playing with me as I was cutting. Next thing I know, I'm a band member. I'm like, how that happened? I'm like, listen, I was just the intern DJ. Yo, the band becomes so popular when they change. Today they're known as the Vibe Band. Now, if you you know anybody in DC, if you say Vibe Band, they'd be like, word, yo, boom. I'm rocking with one of the bands, one of the DC's most prominent bands, and I'm doing my thing. Now I got go-go roots, and I'm doing it. So the band sort of, and go-go, if you're DC, people that live in DC relates to this. Go-go bands are like Lego pieces. You know what I'm saying? They'll break up, but then half the band forms another band, half the band, you know, then somewhere down the line, they'll meet again and they become another band. That's how DC bands work. So, you know, I had to get used to that. So half of the Virtuous band, Vibe band, turned out to be this band called Let It Flow. Let It Flow, my man Sam, my girl Diva, Steve Roy. Oh man, great band. They was just as bad as Vibe band. They rocking out. They playing with. They played with Eric Robinson. If you know who Eric Robinson is, who's a neo soul artist, they've played with Chaka Khan. They've played with stars. Like, wow. The day comes, we play with the Godfather himself, Chuck Brown. May he rest in peace. I'm good now. I'm like, what? I met Chuck Brown? I didn't get to meet James Brown, but I met Chuck Brown. But I was like, I'm good. I'm, you know, I didn't say, Lord, take me now. I wasn't going to do that. But, you know, I'm good. I'm like, word, Chuck Brown. Yes, sir. Chuck Brown. It felt like I'm, as up now, I feel like I was always 6 degrees of separation from some type of greatness or someone. And, so now in my resume, I get to say, like, you know, I played with two of DC's most prolific bands, the Vibe band and Let It Flow. And when I finally came back to New York, I had met up with this sister who started her own internet radio station called She's the Boss Radio. Shout out to my little sister, Lakita Berry. We started down there, but it became more prominent when I came back to New York because I wound up being sick. My mom was sick, so I had to come back to take care of her. When I came back, she reached out to me like, yo, brother, I need your help. Like, we trying to do things. And that was 2010. And she's been running strong ever since. She's the Boss Radio.com. I have a morning show on there called the Good Morning Soul from 10 to 12. And we've been traveling. We've done pop-ups from Baltimore to the Carolinas. And there was a pop-up in Atlanta, but I didn't get to go to that, but I could still put that on the resume, say, listen, we've been to Atlanta. And, we still doing things now. And like with this Twitch thing and this new way of DJing, so to speak, the internet, I mean, I've been on internet for years. I started out with Sick Mix Radio. And that was when I was in Maryland. Shout out to DJ Omaniah, who is what's the boy? He DJs for Wendy Williams. He is the DJ for what's the kid with the hoodie in his name? Something hoodie. It's trap music, so to speak. But he's that DJ. He's doing his thing with it. I ain't mad at him. Please forgive me if I forgot his name, but at least I know hoodie is in his name. But he's from Washington Heights, which is not far from here, from where I live. Through there, I've met phenomenal DJs. Anybody talking to you, sir? That's my cat. Sorry. I met phenomenal DJs. That's where I re-met Lovebug Starsky. May he rest in peace. B-Fats. Harlem Showstopper himself, DJ Danny D, who's like my big little brother. I've met and Mel Starr, who is actually my little brother because he grew up behind me. And that's when I say my cousin T-Rock comes into the picture because during the time I was hanging out with Clark Kent, he was basically hanging with me. He wasn't a DJ. he was just there for the music, you know. And to one day, now he'll tell the story. I forget it. He says, he tells the story. He's like, yo, remember that time when it was me, you, Big Lou, which is not DJ Big Lou, but Big Lou, it was you, Clark, Mr. C, y'all was in the tunnel in the basement and y'all was just playing around. He said, that's how I caught the bug, because y'all was just playing around, but y'all was making it look so fun. He said, you know what? I'm going to get me a set of turntables. And it was like out of a comedy skit. When he said it, you heard the record go. Everybody stopped, looked at him, and then bust out laughing, because we weren't used to him. Like you say, it wasn't like, you know how you got some kids that they, like, when you're not looking, they sort of play with your turntable and everything, act like they did. He wasn't that type of dude. It was just more, he was just there for the music. But when he says it, and everybody laughed. We still joke with him about it today, but truthfully, he is he's Harlem's MVP.
Wow. Like,
he's somewhat of a turntablist. He's not, he'll tell you he's not a turntablist, but he does all them tricks. Listen, all that behind the back through the legs, I'm not going into a contraction. I'm not breaking no limbs. He can still do that. He's nice with it to this day. Now I look up to him.
Wow.
You know, but coming behind that, Mel Starr came behind him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Mel Starr is like a little brother to me. You know, I think I'm one of the only people that can say, I mean, Mel Starr was a scrub. He was trash. You know, I can say that and not get like beat up or threatened, you know, and I'll be like, really, Mel? That's how we going? I can say that.
Yeah, wow, brother.
Hey, so, like I said,
you have an amazing story, brother. And like, man, your story deserves another hour. You can.
That's an hour already? We're good. Okay. My bad.
No, man, but no, it's been really, really great. And I really appreciate the craft that you have of storytelling, and that you're able to share that full story on the podcast here, man. I would love to hear, before we jump into the lightning round, you know, what are some things that you're focused on right now, just to kind of sum us up to the present, and how can we as an audience help you in what you're currently doing?
Right. Okay, Jarvis, that's my cell phone. Sorry about that. Right now I'm, you know, this DJing from home because of COVID, and I'm actually, you can't see it right now, but I'm actually in a boot. I got hit on a bike in 2020, and I'm wearing a boot on my leg, so I can't really go out and work or do anything. So for me, this here is sort of my therapy. Actually, my studio is called The Sanctuary. So, I'm basically just DJing here for the love of the music and for people to listen to. I always say, I just don't want to play what you want to hear, but I want to play what you need to hear, because that's how I think. It's so much music out here and so much diversity that a lot of us get stuck in one lane. So and that's another reason why I always say in my flyers or whatever, always in a different lane. And truthfully, just to be here, just to hear people hear my story, come hear me play. Like, I'm sure I'll change some minds. I ain't gonna change all the minds, but I'll change some minds, and you'll get to understand what a musical journey is. I don't play like everybody else. Like I said, I'm around great DJs, Danny D, Omanaya, we're going to say Eddie B. Swift, who's another person that's been detrimental to me. I don't play like them, but I play so different. Like, it's more like, I don't do parties anymore. I basically say I do showcases. You know, I don't battle. I just go and do showcases. And when I say that, I'm giving basically musical history, a history of music, you know, because I'll play originals, and then I play the samples, and you'll be like, whoa. So yeah, that's basically, you know, I just want people to hear, you know, what I got to offer.
Wonderful, brother. Yeah, super excited to follow your journey and follow everything you're doing in the present. So yeah, let's jump right into the lightning round. Real concise answers, super quick. Let's get this going. You ready?
Yes.
Describe your DJ setup, hardware and software.
Hardware and software. The studio, the sanctuary, consists of four sets of turntables, two controllers. We have mixing boards, laptops. We have a Rodecaster. Our software is basically an Omen gaming computer. I found out using a gaming computer basically helps with when you're doing live streaming very well. And we have tons of speakers.
Besides yourself, who's your favorite DJ?
My favorite DJs. Wow. I can name more than one.
Yep.
Okay. No specific order. Premier, Jazzy Jeff, Scratch, Clark Kent, Danny D, and Miss Her. Miss Her. And a lot of people are going to be like, who is Miss Her? Check her out on Instagram. Miss Her. Yes.
What has been your favorite party or event you've DJed at and why?
Showcases. Because there's more than one. Showcases for me are, like I said, I give, because I'm 56. Most of these showcases are younger cats. I call them Thundercats. Every time I go somewhere, I always see these young Thundercats trying to do, they DJing and doing that. So doing showcases is me is giving them history lessons and showing that old vets like me can still hang. So the last one was it's called the Link Up Tour, which is at this joint called Bleachers in Brooklyn. And I got to meet some young up-and-coming brothers, DJ McLovin. And the reason why I remember that name so much is because I saw the original movie with, and I said, yo, did you get that name from there? He was like, yo, you're the first person to actually ask me that. I was always wondering why would people laugh at my name. And, but the thing is, he played his Caribbean set. Like, I could play it. That's not my lane, but I can play it. But when he played it, I was like, yo, wow. So yeah, that there.
Who's the most interesting person you've met through DJing?
Most interesting person I've met, Erykah Badu. Erykah Badu. You know, it was always rumored that, you know, if you look into her eyes, she's going to shoot you like Medusa. I was like, oh no, I don't need to turn no stone. But yo, her aura. Oh man, her aura is like it. Like I said, it grabs you. It levitates you. Like, and she's like, yo. She approached me. It was like more of I saw her, but I'm not that type. Like I said, I'm a New Yorker. I don't care who you are. You know, you put on one pants leg at a time, like I do. But when I saw her, I met her at Sirius Radio downtown with my boy Eddie B. Swift, and you know, she had the big bodyguard with her and everything. So I'm like, I'm already big, so another big bodyguard, I ain't man, whatever, bro, we gonna toss, we gonna do it. But when she stepped from behind him, it was, I'm not gonna say angels, but you saw the Last Dragon when your man had the glow. Erykah Badu, that there. And like I said, she was real down to earth. Like, she was like, hey, how you doing? This, that, and the third. And I was like, wow, she spoke to me first. It wasn't like, you know, and I wasn't feeling like I was on her quote unquote jock, so to speak. So yeah, Erykah Badu.
What's one thing that you think is missing from live streaming for DJs?
The resources of playing it. Like, it depends on, like, a lot of people, or, you know, you got people on Facebook, you got people on IG that like to play live. And then the thing, and I get the copyright laws, it's the thing of them going through the copyright laws and saying, like, you'll be playing and you'll have 50 or something people in your thing, and all of a sudden you get cut off, you can't get those 50 something people back. So my thing was, why don't they adapt to what Mixcloud is doing? Get those licenses and listen, I pay to be on Twitch. I pay to be on Mixcloud. do the same thing. Charge, and no disrespect that those that are trying to DJ, but it weans out the, I don't want to call you procrastinators or fakers, but it weans out the little man. And sorry to say that, but you get to know who's serious and who's not. If you charge them a certain amount of price, let them DJ. That's what I think is missing. And I think Facebook and IG, even though they're owned by the same company, they need to, you know, come up with something for the DJ. So,
and shout out to any DJ that you know personally whose story should be shared on this podcast as well.
Oh man, Danny D. I would say Mel Starr, but he done did about a billion interviews, so now he don't count no more. DJ Danny D, I think he doesn't get the recognition like he should. DJ Danny D, my little sister DJ Shorty Love, from a female DJ, miss her, man. And matter of fact, I definitely and overlooked it. My a dude who was very detrimental to me in DC, DJ Oso Fresh, from DC. He needs to get his story out as well. So yes,
awesome, brother. Yeah, we look forward to hearing their stories one day. And any DJ that wants to be on the show, they can sign up at djsignup.com. And brother, where can people find you online or even in person if you're still doing events?
Online, my IG and my Twitch are the same. It's I am D Mecca, and it's I A M D M E C C A. On Facebook, it's D Mecca the Soul Conductor, D M E C C A. D Mecca the Soul is D A S U. I'm sorry, D A S O U L, and Conductor C O N D U T A. See me in person. Like I say, you can see me in person on Twitch and sometimes IG when they, you know, when they get cut off. That's what I'm doing right now. You know, I'm still doing showcases, so you can, you know, always catch me at a showcase somewhere in New York.
Awesome, brother. Hey, this has been an amazing story. You're gifted in the skill of storytelling, and I look forward to staying in touch with you, brother, and really checking you out and all your things that you're doing online. So yeah, everyone, please check out Demeca. He's doing an amazing job, and I appreciate you being on the show, brother.
I appreciate it, man. And plus, like I said, you know, with our namesake, you know, I heard we are destined to be. That's what I've heard. Because of our name, even though the spelling is different, but you know, that's what's up, brother. And I thank you, man. I thank you, and I definitely will plug the club. Yes, definitely.
Thank you, brother.